Good morning. It's 6:07. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. Okay, so here you are. You're sitting in a movie theater. It's dark, except for the flickering light on the screen. And a certain scene comes up in the movie, and before you know it, there's moisture on your cheeks, and it's not sweat. You've cried. What movie does that for you? Maybe you're at home watching a movie. Maybe you've watched it over and over and over again precisely because it creates that emotion in you that causes you to weep. It's happened to all of us. We're going to talk about that. E! Magazine, or Entertainment Weekly, rather, has released a list of their top 50 tearjerkers, and we want to hear what your list is. I don't know if we'll get to all 50 of those movies in today's program. We'll at least go through the top 10. Mostly, we want to hear from you. So give us a call at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. Our guest this hour is John Pollock. He's a history instructor at the Madison Area Technical College and a frequent guest on Pop Culture. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
So before we get kick this off and actually go into the list, what are your top? What's your top tearjerker movie of all time?
Wow. Well, what I realized looking at the list is that it's a really subjective thing, and it was. I felt kind of odd that neither of the movies that first sort of came to my mind, or none of the three that I first thought of, were on there. The ones I was thinking of, in no particular order, were something called The History Boys, a British film that came out last year, or at least I saw it last year. It might have come out the year before. Then, secondly, a film by Richard Linklater, one of my favorite films of all time, Before Sunrise, with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, came out like in the mid-90s. And then the other one was John Huston's, his last film, The Dead, which came out in the late 1980s, maybe 87, which is an adaptation of James Joyce's short story by that title. But those are the three I thought of. I mean, I kind of tend to do that anyway. It's always kind of funny when my wife and I go to the movies that, sort of a reverse of the common gender stereotype. And it's like you were saying, there's a final scene, the credits roll, and the lights start to go up, and the person who's sitting there is me, sort of dabbing his eyes. But those are the movies that I really thought of, and none of them were on Entertainment Weekly's list. So I thought, oh, oops.
Well, Entertainment Weekly has done lists of movies before for various reasons, and I find myself never agreeing with their list. So.
Yeah, I looked at I was even poking around, and they have a blog associated with the list, and sort of last thing, if there's your movie's not on here, blog us. Even like the bloggers didn't mention any of those. Oh boy.
Well, movies are matters of taste, and taste is very subjective. There are probably some general rules about movies that evoke strong emotions.
That's for sure.
What would you say they are?
Well, I've taken a look at their list, and they even sort of make reference to it, like in their description of the films, and especially in the blog chatter and so forth. There's a lot of films about childhood. Films with a kid, and any kind of drama with a kid in it is probably going to be a tearjerker. Something's going to happen to the kid. The kid's going to get very sick from an incurable disease. The kid's going to lose his dog, even just the kid's going to grow up and have some occasion to reflect back on his or her life as a child at the end of the film. Childhood seems to be a really recurring theme in these, both tragedies in childhood and people kind of looking back nostalgically at their childhood. So that's a big one. There's kind of a surprising number of sports films. A lot of movies on there. I mean, sports, and it makes sense when you think about it. The sports generates a great deal of emotion that... sports also, for a lot of people, is bound up with their childhood, is bound up maybe with an earlier version of themselves, that they're looking back, they've gotten older, they're not the athlete that they once were, and so when they look back on those times, it's a very emotional thing. You have potential for great kind of come-from-behind stories and inspirational struggles of people overcoming some kind of obstacle in sports films. There's a lot of sports films in there. There's also, it's not just like disease is not a big theme in these films, not just for childhood, but just in general. A lot of the films involve people who are, struggling with some kind of terminal disease, often cancer in a lot of these, especially some of the older films on the list. when chemotherapy and other cancer therapies were not as well developed, and cancer was more of an instant, you know, long-term death sentence. That made for a great deal of filmmaking on these issues. So those are some of the things that tend to come up. War is another one. There are a number of war films on here. Most of them kind of fall into one of those areas: childhood, disease, war, sports. Kind of taking a quick look through the list and
well, let me go through the top 10.
Sure.
And just to give people some context here, the number 10 all-time tearjerker according to Entertainment Weekly, cue drum roll, is Field of Dreams. That's the Kevin Costner baseball picture. Number 9 is Ghost, and number 8 is E.T., Phone Home. Number 7, Brian's Song. That was the movie about Brian Piccolo. James Caan played a football player.
Right.
6, Brokeback Mountain. Number 5, It's a Wonderful Life. Number 4, An Affair to Remember. Number 3, Sophie's Choice. That was a huge tearjerker.
Yeah.
And number 2, no surprise here, Bambi. And the number 1 tearjerker movie, according to Entertainment Weekly, Terms of Endearment. Now, the thing that surprised me was when I saw this topic, I said, okay, number 1 movie, tearjerker of all time, is going to be Old Yeller. And that's down there around, I forget, it's not in the
12.
Top 10, obviously. It's number 12, but I thought, how can that not be number 1?
Yeah.
I mean, holy smokes, you have to kill your own dog. What's sadder than that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, it's subjective, and on anything like this, you know, it's just two ticks out of the top 10. One thing that often comes up on these lists, although in this one I got to give the the list makers credit, often these all-time lists go back to like 1989. You know, they go back maybe 20 years, and so anybody who's looking at the list who can remember a song or can remember a movie or can remember a TV show that's more than 20 years old kind of goes, what the heck? And of course, you know, Old Yeller came out in 57. So yes, that's one thing. I mean, there are several more, more recent films in there. But yeah, I mean, I can't really account for it, more exactly than that. But yeah, that is often a factor on these lists, that you get things that are, you know, that are more recent, sort of skew the picture.
Well, we have some callers who are already waiting, but there are still some lines open, and so we'll give people the phone numbers, and then we're going to take a break for some weather. When we come back, we'll hear what our callers have to say about what they think some tearjerker movies are, or what it is that gets their waterworks flowing if they're in the movie theater or in the privacy of their home watching a DVD. The phone numbers to call, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear this broadcast. In Madison, please use 263-1890. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 minutes after 6 o'clock. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. And today, in this first hour, we're talking about movies that make you cry. Entertainment Weekly came out with a list of their top 50 films of all time that make you cry, and we want to hear from you. What are the movies that make you cry? So we'll be spending a lot of time on the phones this morning. My guest is John Pollock. He's a history instructor at the Madison Area Technical College and a frequent guest here on Wisconsin Public Radio when we talk about pop culture. Let's take a phone call, and we'll go first to Tom in Columbus. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Kind of an interesting topic, not real macho, as they say, but anyway, what gets me every time, and it's from the miniseries Band of Brothers, is the episode Why We Fight, and when they discover the concentration camp. I don't know what it is, you know, if it's the being aghast at how, you know, some people could treat, you know, human beings the way that they portray in this movie, you know, which I'm sure was, you know, tried to be as graphic as they could be, but probably wasn't near the horror that was actually experienced in a place like that. But it chokes me up every time. I mean, you know, it really makes you feel for people, you know, that would
I think we're losing.
It's just horror, horror.
The horror of war. That's always sad.
Yeah, and the well, and the Holocaust in particular. Obviously, there's a the scope of the tragedy, the way that most of the world was unclear what was going on, and then as things became more clear, kind of chose not to act for a while until it was very late in the game. It certainly adds, knowing that now certainly adds to the sense of tragedy and to our sadness of watching films on it. Sophie's Choice coming in at number three again was an example of it. Schindler's List also was one of the things that came up on the blog a lot. People were kind of saying why, Schindler's List should be in there and so forth. Yes, that's definitely, there are a lot of films that that share that theme, both on war in general, and especially as the caller was talking about that particular episode of Band of Brothers, dealing with the Holocaust is sort of, there's a huge amount of potential there because the situation, of course, is so tragic.
Let's go next to Tom in Burlington. Good morning, Tom. You're on the air.
I'm hanging out at this phone here, and there's thunder outside. I hope I don't get a shock of some kind. Anyway, the Brokeback Mountain on there, I was kind of surprised to see it number 10 in the top 10. But there was a scene in there where two people really tell what they really feel right from their guts. It's an amazing, powerful scene. And maybe it just takes one little scene for this to happen and to drive a message home to people. But the right now, Hairspray is out in the theaters, and the scene there that gets me is when you see a husband and a wife singing. It's a musical, and I write music, and I happened to write a musical with a man named Warren Casey, and he wrote the musical Grease, and I had never seen Grease when I was sitting down writing my music with Warren Casey. I had never seen Grease. I knew nothing about it. And so then when he died, I saw it in London, and it was a musical, but I cried through the whole thing because it was such a fun thing, and he had died, and it was an emotional thing for me. But I think if you get a chance to see Hairspray, and even though it is a musical, there are things in there that it's very, very well done, extremely well done, and it might just hit an emotional chord in you.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I haven't seen the musical version. I saw the the original John Waters movie when I was in college, and I liked it a lot because it was funny, and it was just kind of it was more sane than a lot of John Waters' other movies. I like that director a lot, and a lot of his stuff is just way over the top. And this one it was just really fun, but still had kind of a point to it. But it's interesting that the musical would come out that way because I don't remember the movie being particularly a tearjerker. It was kind of like this kind of feel-good movie, and it was light. It was fairly short, and we're like, yeah, it's a good film. So, yeah, I'll check it out.
800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's the toll-free number to join us. And this is an interesting concept here. All of the callers so far to this program have been men.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that. I was thinking, oh, okay, once again, it's sort of, hitting against type here.
Well, see, that's Wisconsin Public Radio. We defy all stereotyping. Let's go next to Michael in Cuttington, Louisiana.
Whoa. Yeah, just passing through, caught the topic and said, oh, this is one of my favorites. But the macho side of it, this is catharsis. Films are the only place where men can sort of get away with crying, I guess, in our society. And to provide the example of my favorite film for crying, which is kind of a strange one, because I was in a movie theater with a bunch of children, and I and my wife are the only two people in the theater who are crying. But the film is Babe the Pig, and when that final line by Farmer Hodgett comes out, we just lost it, and it took my wife about 10 minutes to get our composure back just to leave the theater. And I watch that film over and over again when I'm down and I want to just get it out. The other film that I watch for the same reason is a little bit more of an adult film, and that's Peter Weir's Fearless. The Jeff Bridges performance is just sort of the whole point of what males in America do. We keep our emotions inside, and this is a man who's trapped And he, when he can't express his emotions properly, it becomes, in the film itself, his story is that it almost destroys him. So films provide the tool to cry, and those two films are my favorite. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think the call raised some great points. I mean, you know, and John, you were mentioning this sort of leading up to him, that that movies are one of the places where, you know, where guys can cry openly, or, you know, relatively openly. You know, it's the lights are out for the most part, and so nobody really has to see or anything like that. But yeah, that is really fascinating how that works, and how then it's echoed, how it really brings on the tears for a lot of guys, is films where guys are sort of trapped, where they can't. It's just impossible for them to, you know, to release their emotions. I mean, the previous caller talking about Brokeback Mountain, I mean, that's the sad part in that film. That's what's so tragic about it, is you have two people who are so in love with each other, and they don't have the vocabulary to really express it very much, and they certainly can't kind of live their lives and acknowledge how much they love each other, and they're just sort of stuck that way, and that's the thing that's so sad about it. So, yeah, so I think the caller made some great points there, that this is, you know, perhaps, and it's no accident that the callers so far have all been guys, that, you know, that because this is something guys find, is that on film, this is where you can get in touch with that side, where you can be emotional, where you can weep openly, and it's sort of expected.
Let's go next to Heidi in Osseo. Heidi, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I was listening to this discussion on my way home from work. And I find it very interesting that it's all guys that are calling in. And my favorite tearjerker movie recently is a guy movie called We Are Marshall, about the 1973 plane crash that killed the entire of the University of Marshall football team. The opening of the movie shows the memorial to the football team. And from that moment on, I was out in tears. Because I know the story. I went to Western Michigan, which is a rival of Marshall for a while in the Mid-American Conference, and it was just, you couldn't escape the tears, both of tragedy at the beginning and a joy at the end with the triumph. And there's one more movie I want to mention quickly, is Where the Red Fern Grows, another dog movie, but that's what I wanted to contribute, and I'll turn off and listen.
Well, thank you for the call.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and so first, I guess the first thing I have to say is go Broncos, because I grew up in Kalamazoo, so I know all about where Western Michigan is and their rivalry with Marshall and their teams in the MAC. But yeah, I mean, We Are Marshall. It didn't make the Entertainment Weekly list, but it as the caller pointed out, that's one of the things that that sports films kind of contribute. Is that there are a lot of sports films in there. Especially the, you know, where a team comes back from great adversity, in the case, you know, in that case where their previous team's wiped out in a plane crash. So coming back from adversity is one of them. And also, it seems like it's more of a device that kind of comes up in a lot of these films, whatever genre they're in, whatever plot they are, a device where you know what's going to happen. You know, and I think a lot of war films is the same thing, where you know what the outcome is. And if you know the outcome's not going to be a positive one, then the whole film before that, it becomes that much sadder. As the caller pointed out, We Are Marshall, you know, if you're remotely familiar with the story, you know there's going to be a plane crash at some point, and the team's going to be gone. And even if you don't know that, then you see that shot of the memorial in the beginning just to kind of hammer it home. And so for the rest of the movie, it's kind of like, we know this is going to happen. So, yeah, I think that's, if callers out there, if listeners out there are thinking about making their own tearjerker, that's one of the surefire devices to use, is to, like, tell the entire film in flashback and show evidence of this bad thing that's happened, and that'll bring on the tears, sure enough.
Mary Jo sent us an email from Madison. Her nomination, My Life, a movie about a man whose life is going well. He and his wife are expecting a baby, then finds out he has terminal cancer and might die before his child is born. He decides to film his life so the baby will know him.
Yeah, that was one, and I'm looking on the list here. I don't think it made their top 50, but there were a lot of bloggers who mentioned that one in the commentary afterwards. It was, I think, like Michael Keaton was in that. It was like came out in the mid-80s. Yeah, I mean, they're also, I mean, that's it kind of fits the model a little bit. So you have, on the one hand, it sounds like it's set up pretty early in the movie. You know, this guy's not really going to live very long while his kid's around, And so you know the outcome's not going to be good, and so you're watching somebody kind of desperately try to put something together. That's really, it's a very sad thing to watch.
We've got about a minute before news time. Let's take a quick call from Don in Boscobel. What's your tearjerker movie?
Years ago, there was Catherine's Courageous with Freddie Bartholomew and Spencer Tracy. And Spencer Tracy is there. He's in the water, something has, his legs are clipped off or something. But the acting was great. But then on Golden Pond with Henry Fonda and Jane and Katharine Hepburn, that was a very wonderful movie, too. In a way, there was everything in it that would, you know, you would get very emotional over that.
Okay. Thanks for the call. We'll talk about that when we come back from the news. We're talking about your favorite tearjerker movies. Here on the Ideas Network, I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. That, of course, the theme music from Brokeback Mountain, number 6 on the top 10 all-time tearjerker movies. Good morning. It's 6:36. You're listening to the Ideas Network at Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. And this hour we're talking about, the genesis of this discussion was Entertainment Weekly's top 50 list of tearjerker movies of all time. And our guest is John Pollock, history instructor at the Madison Area Technical College and a frequent guest on pop culture. Well, just before the break, our caller mentioned two movies that I wanted to be sure that we didn't pass up. He mentioned Spencer Tracy's Catherine's Courage and then On Golden Pond, which, of course, was the last movie that Henry Fonda ever made.
Yeah, the Captain's Courageous, the first one, is it's sort of a classic film and unfortunately one that I haven't seen and don't know that much about. On Golden Pond, though, when he mentioned that one, I was thinking that one of the other kind of recurring themes in these tearjerker films is that they're often kind of like the last appearance of an iconic actor, of someone who's either someone who's had a career in film and who off-screen has some kind of terminal disease, or in the case of Henry Fonda, has just had his very long career in pictures and is obviously getting older and is probably not going to be making many more films, to toss a seven-syllable word out there into the airwaves on early in the morning, it's called extratextuality. It's like what a star brings to a movie where you see that person on screen and you think of their life off-screen, you think of scandals they've been involved in or other films they've made or something, you sort of forget that they're playing a character at that point. And I think that's about a big part of Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn's performance in On Golden Pond. This is these two great actors, and it's obviously the end of their careers, and you know, people watching that are wondering, oh, how many more chances we're going to have to see them on screen, makes it a very emotional film.
Let's take another phone call. Before we do that, I want to give the phone numbers again. It's 800-642-1234, toll-free, 800-642-1234. 263-1890 is the number to use if you're in Madison, and we do have a couple of open lines. Okay, let's go to Dave in Stiles Junction. Dave, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. When I first heard your list, I was a little surprised at some of the selections. Field of Dreams, I watch that frequently, and while there's some emotional parts, I just enjoy the movie. I don't necessarily find it a tearjerker. The one that came to mind, though, was a movie made back in the 60s with Rod Steiger, The Pawnbroker. And another movie that came to mind, too, later was the movie The Color Purple. What I find interesting about those, there was several war movies mentioned, and Saving Private Ryan or the series The Band of Brothers, while there's emotional parts in there, for whatever reason, I can watch those movies over and over, but I've yet to go back. I mean, I don't know if The Pawnbroker is even available on DVD, but even if it were, or The Color Purple, I don't know that I could watch those movies again just because of the emotion that evokes in me. And I guess I'm kind of... my wife and I have talked about this, and I don't quite understand that. But, again, The Pawnbroker was one that that came to my mind that was very emotional for me, and like I say, in a secondary sort of, was The Color Purple, and I'll get off the line now.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, the caller illustrated how subjective these lists are, how someone can, you know, have this totally different take on the films on here. Yeah, I'm also, I mean, I have to agree with him about war films, that for the most part, I'll kind of watch them, and I'll say, oh, that's a really, you know, this is a really intense film, and yeah, you know, I look at, you know, if it's a World War II movie, look at my uncles who fought in that war in kind of a different light, maybe understand some things about them, but I can't say they're exactly, you know, like as Caller pointed out, they're not exactly the kind of films that really get me crying generally. Color Purple that he mentioned is one that was really on it didn't make the top 50 list from Entertainment Weekly, but on their blog that they had alongside it, it was just full of posts from people who were saying, oh, come on, you left The Color Purple off the list. How could you do that? The Entertainment Weekly editors even answered it, and they said, well, we didn't want to have, you know, too many Spielberg films on there. E.T. was really high, and so forth. But no, I think that one is, you know, that's definitely a bona fide tearjerker. And I also kind of agree with the caller that the films that I've seen that have really done that, I'm always, you know, I'm not always so sure I'm in a hurry to see them again if it's just a really emotional experience. You know, Schindler's List is one. I saw that once, and I was like, yep, I really don't think I need to see that again. That was very intense. So yeah, I got to agree with him on a lot of that.
See, the movie that I was surprised, and I didn't, I have to confess, I didn't go through the entire list. I didn't see Miracle on 34th Street on there.
Yeah, it didn't make it. Not even in the, you know, in the second 25. Yeah, it's interesting because the only sort of I know a lot of people who feel that way about Christmas movies in general. And they're just like, oh, I tear up when I see this Christmas movie. And the only one that kind of made it, and even then, I don't think it's it's sort of an explicitly Christmas movie. It's A Wonderful Life.
Right.
Is about the only one. But even, you know, that's number five, and then going all the way down, other ones aren't in there. So I'm not sure why that one was left off the list.
Let's take a call next from Barbara in Milwaukee. Good morning, Barbara. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Finally. Listen, maybe men cry about things different than women, I'm certain. War movies and all that. It's A Wonderful Life is one of my favorites, but it wasn't a tearjerker. Uh-huh. It was cute.
Yeah.
I find a tearjerker, a serious tearjerker, was the movie The Notebook. I can't for the life of me remember the actor, though. He played in The Rockford Files, if you know who that guy is.
James Garner.
I can't remember him. Yes, profound actor, he and the co-actress with him. The movie is about two lovers who come from different worlds, and their parents didn't want them together. And the way the playwright uses flashbacks, they start off with they're old and they're in the nursing home, and the lady has Alzheimer's, so she really doesn't remember. So uh-huh. He's reading the story of their life,
uh-huh.
and then the movie flashes back and shows how they got together and how they were torn apart and how he wrote her for years, and the mother intercepted the letters and she never got them. She tried to move on, and back and forth, they're showing him in the current phase where he's reading to his wife, and she doesn't even know that she's his wife until he gets to the end of The Notebook, and then she starts to remember.
Yeah.
And then for 5 minutes, she's there with him, slow dancing, and then boom, the Alzheimer kicks in, and she doesn't remember him anymore. She thinks he's going to attack her, and he breaks down crying. It is a tearjerker for real. I mean, children cry on this movie.
Yeah. Well, it's on the list. It's actually, it just missed the top 10. It was number 11. So the Entertainment Weekly compilers definitely agreed with you on it. And as you're describing it and talking about the movie in more detail and how Alzheimer's is a really central role, I was thinking, I mean, as people are living longer, there are more people out there who have Alzheimer's. They're from families. They're caring for someone who has the disease. So it seems like that's going to be, I can't imagine we won't see more films that have that as a theme, because that's it's a very tragic disease, and as the caller pointed out, the nature of it, where in the early to intermediate stages, it sort of comes and goes, and people have these periods of lucidity where they're conscious of what's going on, and then it just kind of all snaps off. That's definitely, I mean, in real life, it's tragic, so it makes for an especially sad movie. I think that's an excellent choice.
Let's go back to the phones, and let's take a call next from Rita in Wauwatosa. Rita, go ahead.
Hi. I guess women like love stories. And I just saw a movie that's called Sweetland. My husband died in May, and after a month, I decided to go to a movie because I hadn't been able to go for a couple of years. And I cried from the beginning to the end and for 3 days. It's just a beautiful love story set in Minnesota. The woman is a mail-order bride, and they refuse to marry her because she's German. And there's so much sentiment after the First World War against Germans. But it's a love story that begins with her dying, and it goes through their life. And it's, I had friends watch with me to see if it was just me in my position right now, but they cried too. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. I don't know who the people are that play in there, but it's beautiful.
Thanks for the call. We'll talk about that right after we take a break for the weather here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the top tearjerker movies of all time with our guest, John Pollock, history instructor at Madison Area Technical College and a frequent guest on pop culture. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. 6:47. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine. Well, after 11 o'clock this morning, some of the strangest Wisconsin stories in the last 300 years get an airing. Larry Miller's guest is Erica Janik, author of Odd Wisconsin. That's after 11 this morning here on the Ideas Network. Well, just before the break, we were talking about the movie Sweetland. Is that one you've seen?
It's not one I've seen. I remember when the caller described it and she talked about the setting and so forth, it came out, yeah, as she said, it's very recent. And I think that's one of the things that the list kind of leaves off. It's an independent production. It was filmed, I think, on location in Minnesota, or at least somewhere in the upper Midwest, standing in for Minnesota. So I think it played here in Madison at the Wisconsin Film Festival and did some other business that way, and maybe didn't have a nationwide release even. I'm not sure if it was released all over the country or if it was just something that was kind of, you know, put in here because it's about the area. And so a film like that, I think one of the things that's great about smaller independent productions is that when you're watching a film like that, you don't know what's going to happen to the people. You know, as the caller pointed out, she, you know, couldn't remember who was in it. They were probably, not really big-name actors. They're not. It's not like, Tom Cruise or Robert Redford or Barbara Streisand or somebody who you know what's going to, you know they're going to be there. So it becomes so much more realistic that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen to them. And, I think those are often, you know, when people seek those films out, you can often have the most emotional experiences from them because you're not thinking, oh, well, yeah, it's going to be okay in the end because, look, it's Tom Hanks. Everything's okay. You know, you don't know who this person is. So it makes it more emotional and intimate.
Let's go next to Glenn in Edgerton. Glenn, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah. I think animated movies are often given kind of short shrifts on almost any kind of list, and I wanted to mention Brad Bird's 1999 movie, The Iron Giant. He's since done The Incredibles and Ratatouille, and everybody knows those, but not everybody knows The Iron Giant, and there's a scene at the end of that movie where this robot sacrifices itself for a small town that's about to be hit by a nuclear warhead, primarily because of the lessons that this boy teaches him through classic comic books, and which it sounds kind of trite, but this ending just kills me every time. I've stood in stores watching it on TVs with tears in my eyes, and it's just a fantastic movie.
Well, I got to agree with you about the usual disrespect for animated films. But in this case, Entertainment Weekly actually put The Iron Giant at number 38. And they said, you know, in their review, they said some of the same things about it. It's this very touching movie, and it's one of the things that's kind of funny about animation is, you know, so you try to describe it. You try to say, all right, so what is it that made this film a tearjerker? Why was this a very intense movie? And you say, and you know, you start out saying, oh, it's this giant robot, a lot of people are kind of lost right there. They're just like, okay, giant robot, what exactly? But, you know, in the context of the film, you know, what's great about animation is it can humanize things that aren't usually humanized. You know, you can have this talking robot, you can have anything you want. And over the course of a feature-length film, really develop this emotional attachment to whatever this animated object is. So, yeah, I agree with the caller that can be, you know, it's going to be very effective. I remember one of the first movies I ever saw in the theater was the original animated version of Charlotte's Web, and that made me really sad. And it was a really poorly drawn cartoon at that, looking back at it. But yeah, animation can do this. It can be as emotional as live acting.
Well, it's the story that's evocative. It isn't necessarily the pictures on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The story, and you just get caught up in it. You start identifying with the characters, whoever or whatever they are, and you just get swept along with it.
Let's go next to Dan in Drummond. Dan, good morning.
Yeah, the one movie that I always liked, and it's one of those that I enjoy watching over and over again, and it makes me emotional, is How Green Is My Valley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. And that one also, it's that kind of nostalgia. You know, it's looking back on things, and you sort of, you know, in some ways how things are going to turn out, in other ways you learn over the film. That looking back at childhood from an adult's perspective is often it's sort of a mixture of longing and sadness and other things. So that's a great one.
Thanks a lot for the call, Dan. Let's go next to Christoph in Minneapolis. Christoph, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, one of the movies that I watched, although I don't want to watch it again, is Hotel Rwanda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that film broke me down so much because of the massacre that was perpetrated on the tribe. I don't remember the name of the tribe, but... The fact is that it broke me so much because of the betrayal by the government of doing no little to help these people that are very helpless. And also it portrayed also that the outside world didn't help a lot in that genocide. So that film was so emotional to me.
Yeah, that I think the caller makes a great point. And actually, I think that's too, Entertainment Weekly didn't put that one on their list. I think that's kind of a big omission. That with a film like Hotel Rwanda, I mean, again, you know, by now, when someone talks about Rwanda, anybody who's had like half an eye on the news in the past 15 years is going to know how that turns out as well. Is going to know it's this very rapid genocide, and where again the world kind of stood by and didn't really do anything. And so to have to, you know, knowing how things are going to turn out, and then have to watch this film as that whole story is kind of unfolding, and the betrayals that go on, and the ignorance of the whole problem that are going on. Make for a really sad film.
800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. A couple of lines just opened up, so you have a chance to get in. 800-642-1234. In Madison, please use 263-1890. Let's go next to Sparky in Milwaukee. Sparky, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. A wonderful program as usual. I'll make this brief because of the time. I am myself a recovering Catholic. But the one that really gets me every time I see it is The Mission. Not only the end, but that music where the priest made and played the flute, and the Indians which broke it and brought him back into his the village and made The Mission, and the massacre at the end. But mostly the music of all motion pictures that I've seen.
That's an interesting point, and it's one we haven't really talked about so far on the show, but I think it's a great one, that... That one of the things you get in film where we don't really have in our real life most of the time is the role that music plays. That you hear a certain song, or you hear even just a certain instrumentation or a style of music, and it can call up a whole bunch of memories in somebody watching it that have all these sad associations. Music can be even the Brokeback Mountain sample from the soundtrack we played about halfway through this show. Again, for people who saw that movie, it's you hear that, you remember what was going on, and it's this kind of sad moment. That's an excellent point.
Well, let's take another call from somebody who's going to mention a movie that I think should have been on this list, and that is Dawn in Alaska. Good morning.
Good morning. The movie I love and I give it as a birthday present, Christmas gift, is Secondhand Lions. You know,
Absolutely.
Have two grown men that take on this little boy, and you're sad for the boy because his mother is... maybe a little less than perfect, and then these two grown men, I don't know, it's great. I guess I'm getting well enough thinking about it. It's just a very incredible movie, and it's a feel-good movie, too, because you really start seeing how a little boy can soften up two eccentric men.
And then there's a great love story buried inside of it too. And that was a terrific movie. I actually bought the DVD.
Wow. Yeah, it's not one I'm familiar with. I've got to check it out.
I'm trying to remember who was in that. I know. I'll never remember it. The way the story starts out, there's a young boy, and I think it's the same actor who was in. My memory's failing me this morning, among other things. Let's take another phone call. Commodore in Oshkosh, good morning.
Morning.
What's your favorite tearjerker movie? You're on the air.
It was actually kind of funny, but Short Circuit 2. I thought it was just so sad in the end, you know? I mean, I thought it was really sad. I saw it when I was really young, but, you know, I mean, I just came to, like, love the character through the whole thing, and then, you know, when he almost, like, dies in the end, it's just really sad.
Wow. This is what's great about the topic, is it is so subjective. I mean, I saw the original Short Circuit, and, Short Circuit 1, and I remember even then just kind of saying, oh, this is, you know, I sort of watched it, and I thought, oh, what a silly idea for a movie. Come on. And I sort of left, and then I saw there was a sequel, and I thought, right, but people who checked it out found that it was, the point they were at in their lives when they saw it and what's going on. They have up an identification with this little robot character, and it's very sad.
Hey, I cried at Space Camp. Let's try and get another caller in here before the top of the hour. Donna in Burlington. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This movie is an older one, and I just remember it being... It just touched my heart. It was Brian's Song with Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers, the football players.
Right, that's number 7 on the top in the top 50 list. So good choice.
Thank you.
We're just about we're pretty much out of time. We've got maybe another 30 seconds left here, John Pollock. Any movie we didn't bring up yet that probably should have made the list and wasn't?
Haven't really thought of any others. I mean, the callers who phoned in had some great choices there. Those are Color Purple. I think is got to be way up there, for instance. Those are the ones that come. Those are the I think those are some great choices we got from the collective listeners out there today.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
All right, thank you.
John Pollock, history instructor at the Madison Area Technical College and a frequent guest on Wisconsin Public Radio when we want to talk about pop culture. This morning's program was produced by Leo Duran with on-air production by Karen Prager and Cheryl Gasser. It's program number 87A, as in Apple or Academy or Award. And if you'd like a copy of it, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.